Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. We're opening our show today with some highlights of President Barack Obama's State of the Union Address, which was delivered on Tuesday with a theme of opportunity for all. The president pledged to make this a year of action to restore the promise of America and opportunities for every American. He said that after 4 years of economic growth, corporate profits and stock prices have rarely been higher, and those at the top have never done better, but average wages have barely budged, inequality has deepened, and upward mobility has stalled. He said, "The cold, hard fact is that even in the midst of recovery, too many Americans are working more than ever just to get by, let alone get ahead, and too many still aren't working at all." He then laid out a set of goals to speed up growth, strengthen the middle class, and build what he called new ladders of opportunity into the middle class. His goals include executive actions he plans to take, as well as other actions that would require congressional approval. The president's first act has already been taken, an executive order to raise the minimum wage for workers on federal contract projects, and he called on Congress to raise the minimum wage for all employees. He announced a summit on working families to build a 21st century workplace, as well as launch 4 new manufacturing institutes. Other plans include asking the vice president to review the federal job training system and propose improvements and partnering with leading CEOs to help the long-term unemployed. He also called on Congress to extend unemployment benefits that recently expired for the long-term unemployed. He also spoke about the Affordable Care Act, and he challenged Republicans opposed to his plan to come up with a specific plan of their own to cover more people and increase coverage. "But let's not have another 40-something votes to repeal a law that's already helping millions of Americans," he asked. "We all owe it to the American people to say what we're for, not just what we're against." The president called for congressional action to strengthen the Voting Rights Act following a Supreme Court decision that weakened a key provision. Turning to international issues, he noted that when he took office, nearly 180,000 Americans were serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. Today, all U.S. troops are out of Iraq and half have returned from Afghanistan, where the president said our mission will be completed by the end of this year and America's longest war will finally be over. Yet, he said, danger remains from al-Qaeda, so America must remain vigilant in pursuing terrorist networks. But the president also said he's working with Congress to reform surveillance programs under the NSA because, he stated, the work of our intelligence community depends on public confidence here and abroad, that the privacy of ordinary people is not being violated. He cited additional challenges ahead, such as making sure that Iran does not develop a nuclear weapon. "Our freedom and democracy have never been easy," the president concluded, then repeated his goal of creating improved opportunities for all Americans, as well as assuring justice, fairness, and equality under the law. But he ended, "If we work together, if we summon what is best in us, with our feet planted firmly in today but our eyes cast towards tomorrow, I know it's within our reach."
This is Leon Thompson for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, and today I'm speaking with Marilyn Lyons, who's an independent insurance broker in California and licensed to do so. We're going to talk about the Affordable Care Act, better known as Obamacare. So how is it going, Marilyn?
Oh, wonderfully well, yes. It's a pleasure to be here, by the way, and to share a little bit about how the Affordable Care Act is helping people access healthcare venues and also to really be able to choose plans that fit their needs and their budget.
3 million people have signed up nationally for healthcare under the Affordable Care Act. And in California, that includes nearly 500,000 people in the first 3 months of covered California.
Yes, isn't that a marvelous statistic? Many people are realizing the benefit of the Affordable Care Act and what it's offering, an access to medical care, which so many people in California have not had. And it's quite interesting that I'm finding that it's not just people that are low income that have not had access to health care, but it's quite an interesting range of actual earnings that people have not had access.
And so there's some people that get access now that they never had before, and others that are yet to be covered. Do we have any statistics on where these people are and where do they come from?
Well, we do. We know that at least 1.4 million are newly qualified for Medi-Cal, which means that they are making approximately less than $16,000 a year. And those are people that have not had any access to health insurance. And again, those are a primary concern for society because, as we know, 60% of our bankruptcies in California are medical bankruptcies. So again, providing these people with access to medical care and certainly keeping our costs down overall as a result is a wise movement. So
that's the expansion of Medi-Cal.
And that's true.
Now, people who are on their parents' plan are covered until they're 26, am I right?
Some people are covered on their parents' plan until 26. It depends, and there are a variety of different circumstances why they wouldn't be. Mm-hmm. Some attend college in other areas of the United States, and it's a bit difficult if they have an HMO plan, that would be difficult.
It's a California plan, but they're in school in Mississippi, right?
Exactly. Uh-huh. And then there are other reasons. Perhaps some individuals, 18 plus, don't choose to be on their parents' plan
Parents don't have insurance.
Or their parents don't have any access to health care, right. And hopefully they soon will access to the insurance exchange in California. Adult students, there are 761,000 that are not covered. That's 18 plus. Plus adult students, age 18 plus. Hopefully we will raise awareness and get people out there to get signed up.
Right. So young people who have low-paying jobs would get some help from the government to be covered.
And then construction workers are next on that list at 563,000 that are not covered with health insurance. And beyond that, it's the restaurant and food services industry that have at least 17,000 current statistic that are not covered with health care.
It sounds like small businesses to me. You're talking construction or restaurants. It sounds to me like it would be helpful if small businesses could supply health insurance for their employees.
That is absolutely true. And that leads us to something very important that the Affordable Care Act brought to us, and I think many people are not aware of, and it's called SHOP. S-H-O-P. It actually stands for Small Business Health Options Program. And it's a marvelous opportunity for small businesses to cover their employees with health care and obtain a wonderful tax credit if they are willing to pay at least 50% of the premium of their employees. So let's give an example here. If you have a small business and they have, let's say, 10 full-time employees, and full-time is defined as working 30 hours or more, and let's say the average wage of that employee is $25,000 or less, that small business can qualify for the maximum tax credit of 50%. What that means in dollars to the small businesses, it means a wonderful tax credit for them. Rough figures, let's say they are paying half of their employees' premium each month. They are required to pay half of that premium. Mm-hmm. And let's say it amounts to about $25,000. Mm-hmm. At the end of that year, $25,000, they will pay taxes on $12,500. So in other words, it's cut in half. They can consider that $12,500 never passed through their business. In other words, it's not eligible for being taxed. So the tax credit reduces their earnings to the $12,500.
Well, then it sounds like it's a savings for the employee as well as a benefit for the employer.
That certainly is true. It's a win-win situation, and I just hope that more small businesses become aware of this option because it will save money. In the insurance world, we always talk about spreading the risk. We talk about risk pools. Well, the more employees you get into a group plan, number one, the better coverage that can be offered and the lower premiums can be, obtained. So it's so important for employers to realize this. And the benefit to the employer, again, is the tax credit. Well, the employer gains the goodwill and the loyalty of the employee because the employee realizes that, this employer has some stake in me. He's willing to at least pay 50% of my premium each month. When the employees actually realize that they are going to be able to get insurance through their employer and that they only have to pay a portion of that, 50% of a premium that probably would be very diminished anyway, very much smaller. It's a great benefit for them. And secondarily, for the employee to get better coverage at a lower rate, it's a win-win situation. I think that really, really adds to that goodwill. You cannot underestimate the value of having that employee feel bonded with the employer and as if he can trust the employer. And I think that, again, that goodwill and that loyalty really goes a long way when the employer is showing that they care enough to offer the health insurance to their employee.
What else would you like to know about the shop coverage?
Well, I think the main thing is that you are really, overall, you're going to get a better coverage under the small business program because, again, as we're spreading the risk, we're increasing the coverage because the premiums go down. They're able to offer at a lower rate a better plan, a plan that covers more. Now, there are some comparable plans on the individual insurance exchange, and so it depends on the financial situation of each small business, and it really does need to be evaluated by a professional because it can amount to six of one and half a dozen of the other, depending on how, what the income of the small business is and what their projection is for the next business and fiscal year. Anytime you're spreading the risk and increasing it to an entire, a larger group, you're going to reduce the premiums. And so let's say the employer chooses a tier. Now the tiers, I don't know if you're familiar with, but there are four tiers in the Affordable Care Act. There's the bronze tier. And that's a 60% actuarial value. Then there is the silver tier, which can be 70% or higher. And there's the gold tier at 80%. And there's the platinum at 90% actuarial value. And that means that the carrier is carrying that 90% of bills, leaving the 10%, let's say, at the platinum level to the actual policyholder.
So that's like your deductible.
Well, it's not exactly a deductible, but it is the amount that the individual would need to pay if they had a major medical catastrophe or they had a major medical bill. All right. So there's always in every policy going to be an out-of-pocket maximum that the individual should pay very close attention to.
Right.
And that is probably the key term that an individual should know if they're looking at insurance so that they realize that they wouldn't owe any more than that particular amount based on their particular policy. And again, if any of those rates ever exceed 8% of their income, then they can always go to the insurance exchange because the measure of what is considered affordable for a healthcare plan is 8% of the person's income. So should the employer offer a plan that exceeds that 8%, then they can always go to the individual side of the healthcare exchange in California and obtain insurance.
So if I wanted to know more as a small businessman, how would I find out some more of the details about the program you call SHOP, S-H-O-P?
Yes, Small Business Health Options Program again. It is required that you use a licensed agent. You must be a licensed agent in order to offer this plan to small businesses. But you can find out more at coveredcalifornia.com.
We thank you so much for coming in and helping us with the Affordable Care Act.
All right. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure being here.
This is East County Magazine's Capital Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with today's Capital Report. The Obama administration is on track to deport over 2 million people, according to a new report from the University of California at Merced. That's about the same number deported under the Bush administration, but more than the United States deported during over a century from the late 1890s to the late 1990s. On average, those deported had lived in the U.S. for 14 years, leading to concerns about the criminal alien program's impact on families, A quarter of all people deported since mid-2010 are parents with children in the U.S., including parents of American citizens. Arturo Camona, executive director of Presente.org, the largest national Latino online advocacy organization in the U.S., denounced the practice. He said that the news of continued record-breaking deportations by the Obama administration comes as no surprise to those of us who live and work in Latino communities, where we hear daily stories of destroyed families and cries of children whose hard-working parents have been ripped from their arms, he said. He added, such continued disrespect of the Latino community raises the question, how long will Latinos continue to consider and treat President Obama as a friend when he destroys Latino families at a record-breaking pace? But conservatives in Congress have taken a hard line on immigration and deportation issues, insisting on stronger enforcement before they will consider immigration reform. Another report from the Migration Policy Institute noted that the U.S. spends more on immigration enforcement than on all other federal law enforcement combined. The policy is also costly. Human Rights Watch's latest world report found that illegal reentry into the U.S. has become the most prosecuted federal crime. Deportations reached a record 419,000 in fiscal year 2012, U.S. Department of Homeland Security data indicates. Deportations rose both in people with and without criminal convictions, and some were for minor offenses. Nearly a quarter of those deported were for crimes involving traffic offenses. Another quarter were for drug convictions, and one in five were for immigration crimes such as illegal entry or reentry to the U.S. The number of border arrests, mostly at the U.S.-Mexico border, also rose to 365,000 in 2012. The high rate of deportations increases pressure on Congress to take action on comprehensive immigration reforms to address whether or not to extend legal status to the estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants, including many children, living in the United States.
Attention high school seniors. You can receive free cash for attending financial aid workshops. In an effort to increase the number of high school students in the San Diego area who apply for free college financial aid, 13 Cash for College workshops will be held in late January and February. Last year, San Diego area students who participated in these workshops were offered over $3 million in federal and Cal Grant aid. Seniors who attend a workshop and apply for a Cal Grant by March 2nd deadline could qualify for an extra $1,000 in cash for college scholarship offered at each workshop. Workshop information is available at www.calgrants.org/workshops. Local public officials, including Congressman Scott Peters, State Senator Marty Block, and Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez, held an event last week to speak out and encourage students to attend these workshops. College financial aid increases opportunities for students to attend a college or university of their choice. The Public Policy Institute of California estimates that the state will need an additional 1 million Californians with four-year degrees or higher by 2025, because 41% of the state's jobs will require a bachelor's degree or higher. Currently, only 35% of adults will be prepared to meet this demand, so increasing college access and affordability is essential. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Julian Rudfalls.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
Tribal members from the Kishan Nation traveled by caravan to Ocotillo on January 17th and 18th to mourn the desecration of their ancestors' burial grounds by the Ocotillo Express Wind Facility. Tribal members met at the Ocotillo Community Center and staged a run carrying a banner that read, "We want respect for our ancestors' remains." They carried it to the wind site, where they held an all-night mourning ceremony for their ancestors. Pattern Energy's industrial wind facility was built on top of lands known as Valley of the Dead by Native American tribes for over 10,000 years. The Viejas Band of Kumeyaay Indians here in East County also objected to the desecration of their ancestral remains and persuaded the California Native American Heritage Commission that the state should take action on the tribe's behalf. But those efforts were recently thwarted by California Attorney General Kamala Harris. Testimony at a Native American Heritage Commission hearing in San Diego revealed that some ancient remains were actually removed from the site and stored far away at a distant location, while others remain on the Wind Project site itself. Forensic dogs brought in by Native Americans and trained to find ancient remains alerted at over 50 locations at the Wind Project, and yet the federal government allowed construction to proceed. The Native American Heritage Commission ruled in Vieja's favor and declared the site a sanctified Native American cemetery. Further, the commission asked California's Attorney General to allow the commission to pursue legal action against the federal government for approving the energy project on Bureau of Land Management public land where tribal burial sites, artifacts, and other cultural resources were supposed to be protected. However, Attorney General Harris has informed the Native American Heritage Commission that it does not have the jurisdiction to sue a federal agency over a project on federal lands. Harris further advised the commission that her office would no longer represent the commission on the Ocotillo matter due to a conflict of interest, according to a letter sent by the Native American Heritage Commission to Vieja's chairman Anthony Pico. The nature of the Attorney General's conflict was not disclosed. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Mark Gavitt reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ on a recent tragedy in El Cajon. El Cajon police have arrested Hector Hoyt, an SDG&E worker who was accused of fleeing the scene after striking a 54-year-old man crossing Hamasha Road on January 6th. Hoyt was driving his SDG&E utility truck at the time. SDG&E has indicated that Hoyt is no longer an employee and that he was not using the vehicle for company business at the time of the fatal crash. The victim, Robert Fisher, was left lying in the street in the darkness, where he was then struck by a second vehicle and died at the scene. The second driver called 911 and cooperated with the police. 10 News reports that Fisher was a transient. Hoyt was arrested while on his way home. Hoyt had previously been convicted of driving under the influence in 2005. The prior incident raises questions about the adequacy of background checks conducted by SDG&E for its hiring.
This is Nandi Davin reporting for East County Magazine. El Cajon police have arrested two suspects in connection with the hatchet attack on the owner of Hamlin Jewelers. 23-year-old Travis Scott Kelly of San Diego is accused of assaulting the 75-year-old store owner with the blunt end of a hatchet. He is charged with attempted homicide, armed robbery, elder abuse, and other charges. A La Mesa man, 21-year-old Ali Armin Toombs, is also in custody for driving the getaway car. Toombs faces charges of conspiracy to commit a felony and robbery. The assault occurred on January 22nd at 3:30 p.m. Kelly allegedly entered Hamlin Jewelers on Fletcher Parkway on a ruse of buying merchandise, then robbed and viciously attacked the owner. The victim remains hospitalized with head injuries. Based on information from witnesses and a partial license plate of the getaway vehicle, detectives from the El Cajon Police Department were able to locate the Toyota 4Runner used in the crime. The vehicle was stopped on January 23rd, and the occupant was identified as Toombs. Kelly was later identified as the suspect in the assault. Kelly was arrested in Ocean Beach on Friday afternoon, according to Lieutenant Frank LaHaye at the El Cajon Police Department.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the San Diego Performance Academy. And today, my guest is Robin Reardon, who is the Executive Director of the Lakeside River Park Conservancy. Robin, welcome to the show.
Hi, Miriam. Thanks for having us.
Well, now I understand that you have a really big announcement about a very special event coming up.
I do. Lakeside's River Park has completed a half mile of trail along the San Diego River, and we are opening up that trail on March 8th at 9 a.m. So we're inviting the entire community to come out, see the new trail, walk the new trail, and it's also going to be the ending point of a race that we're having on May 10th.
Very exciting.
It's going to be very exciting.
Let's talk a little bit more about this new trail. Okay. I understand that it's in Lakeside.
It most certainly is. It is located, the way you access it is through the Lakeside Baseball Fields, which is on Marathon Way on the Lakeside portion of Mast Boulevard near the dead end.
Tell us what the trail is like.
We think it's lovely. The most special thing about this trail is that it takes the San Diego River Trail under a major road. And for the local community, that that just looks like the trail goes under a road. But for people who are building a trail, taking a trail into the riverbed necessitates a whole ton of permitting and all kinds of different construction techniques. So this is a major success that it goes under the road. You don't have to be confronted with traffic. Your kids can ride their bikes safely. And it leads to Lakeside's baseball fields, which is a great thing.
The event on March 8th from 9 to 11 a.m., I understand there's going to be all kinds of family activities going on. You can make a bird feeder. What else?
We're going to be having different environmental groups out there so they can learn about what's going on in the county.
Now, this is all part of a broader vision for a system of trails in our region. Tell us about that.
Okay. Basically, about 13 years ago now, people in San Diego County got together and realized that the San Diego River was a huge resource for the community. It was a resource for flood control, it was a resource for habitat, and it was also a recreational resource. So a variety of groups were formed, including a state chartered conservancy, much like the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy, if you're familiar with that, with the goal of creating a park along the San Diego River. And the way that park is going to be realized is a trail that goes from Dog Beach and Ocean Beach all the way up to Julian.
Wow, so it'll be from the mountains to the sea.
From the mountains to the sea, yeah. It's going to be very wonderful. And it's going to connect existing amenities. So one day you should be able to ride your bike from Lakeside to Mission Valley or ride your bike to the beach or vice versa. And we're trying to connect all of the different parks, shopping areas along the trail so that everybody has access to them and a non-motorized way.
How much of it is actually built or created at this point, and how much is yet to go? Do you know?
Oh, I think probably 75% of it still needs to be created.
Mm-hmm. What can people do who want to help make this vision happen?
Well, they can communicate with Lakeside's River Park at www.lakesideriverpark.org. We are always more than willing to take donations to help with this project, but also help in the form of labor coming out, organizing your employees if you have an employee group.
Yeah, volunteering.
Volunteering.
What about land? To our events. Do you need land? Do you have the land you need for this yet?
We do have land. Putting this trail together is something like a patchwork quilt. When land is available, we need to be able to purchase it or place an easement over it so that the trail can go through. So if you own land along the San Diego River and would be willing to consider an easement for a trail or an outright purchase, please contact me. I am at 619-443-4770.
Well, that sounds great. Now, one last thing. I'd like you to tell us a little bit about the race that you said you have coming up in May.
In May. The race is on May 10th. And it is going to be, we've held the race for 7 years now, and this is going to be a really spectacular race. We are partnering with the City of Santee and Santree Fest. We are going to not only have a race that begins at 8 o'clock in the morning, we're going to have a bike rally so that bicyclists can do the same thing at a later time. Oh, and Santee is really, really gearing up for some fun events. They will have a vendor fair with all kinds of booths, with all kinds of kid-friendly activities. And the other thing we're going to be doing is we're going to have a bike valet for the first time.
A bike valet?
A bike valet.
Valet to park your bicycle.
Yeah, so with a bike valet, you could ride your bike in and then go to the bike valet. They will park your bike, give you a ticket, and you can wander around, enjoy all the festivities, and then go back, pick up your bike, and ride your bike home. And we think that would make coming to this event on your bike so much easier.
Very good. Well, it's really exciting to hear all the great things that are happening along the San Diego River with the Lakeside River Park Conservancy.
One more thing. We're going to be having a beer garden at the race.
Mm.
So people are very excited about that.
Interesting. Well, there you go. Thank you so much, Robin, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, The Scansel, and letting us know all the great things that are happening in Lakeside and all along the San Diego River.
Well, thank you so much, Miriam. Very much appreciate it.
Okay.
This is Julian Rudfalls reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ. The Sheriff's Homicide Division is asking for the public's help in identifying additional victims or witnesses in connection with an assault in Spring Valley. On January 14th, just before 7 p.m., 61-year-old Daniel Sparks was found lying in the intersection of Gillespie Drive and Frederick Street with his head bleeding. It is believed two young males attacked him with a skateboard, one of the three known skateboard attacks in the vicinity. Sparks was taken to a hospital, treated, and released. 3 days later, Sparks was found unconscious in the 9,000 block of Tamashaw Road. He was taken to a hospital where he died the next day. The investigation into Sparks' attack led to the discovery of two more assaults in the area, where two other victims were struck in the head with a skateboard. Two suspects in connection with the attacks have since been identified as 18-year-old Javier Garcia and a 17-year-old male. Both suspects are now in custody. They are facing charges of assault with a deadly weapon causing great bodily injury and attempted robbery. Homicide detectives believe that there may be additional unidentified victims and are witnesses to these crimes. If anyone has recently been a victim or witnessed an assault or attempted robbery in the 800 block of Gillespie Drive, 500 block of Sweetwater Road, 9000 block of Tamashaw Road, or surrounding areas, contact the Sheriff's Homicide Division at 858-974-2321. After hours, call the non-emergency line at 858-565-5200.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
County officials joined with hundreds of volunteers who hit San Diego's streets early last Friday across the county to take part in the point-in-time count of homeless people. The annual Snapshot in Time is part of the We All Count campaign by the Regional Task Force on the Homeless. The final count is used to apply for federal funds, and it also helps county staff identify the scope of the problem and work on solutions to best serve this at-risk population. Now, last year, the region's combined total came to 8,879 men, women, and children living on the streets, the third highest number in the nation. These homeless people included veterans, families, substance abusers, and those living with HIV or AIDS, the chronically homeless, and victims of domestic violence. Supervisors Greg Cox and Ron Roberts asked their fellow supervisors to allow employees to participate on paid county time, and the board agreed. More than 400 employees signed on for the 4 a.m. to 7 a.m. shift. Supervisor Roberts said, "The spirit of volunteerism among our county employees is very strong. We knew all we had to do was ask for help, and they responded by the hundreds." Supervisor Cox was among those who took part in the count Friday morning, which he called an eye-opening experience. He said, "We talked with several homeless individuals, including a veteran and a pregnant woman. The experience was humbling and helped me gain a better understanding of the gaps in services and the many challenges facing these individuals." He thanked employees who answered the call to volunteer, adding, "Together, our efforts will make a difference." The county applied for homeless funding from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, on behalf of the Regional Continuum of Care. That's a joint collaborative effort between the county and the city of San Diego. Last year, HUD awarded over $15 million to pay for local homeless services. But while the 2013 homeless count showed San Diego had the third highest homeless population in the nation, San Diego ranked 18th when it came to federal funding eligibility to help the homeless. A HUD report showed our county fell behind only New York and Los Angeles in the number of homeless people. Both the city and county of San Diego are lobbying HUD to update their funding guidelines so that our region will get federal funding in keeping with the size of our local homeless population. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is Eli Cameron with a traffic alert. Motorists should expect short delays on portions of State Route 94 for the next 2 weeks as work continues on a pavement rehabilitation project. One-way traffic control will be in effect on eastbound Highway 94 from Proctor Valley Road, Otay Lakes Road, and in the westbound direction in the vicinity of Marin Valley Road from now through Monday, February 17th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., according to Caltrans. No work is expected to take place during the weekends. Construction crews are taking advantage of unseasonably warm weather to continue the project. Flaggers will be on site directing motorists through the one-way traffic control, and signs will be placed at both ends of the construction zone. Motorists may experience some delays, but the traffic wait should not exceed 10 minutes in either direction, according to Caltrans. The work is needed to provide a smoother ride for motorists and extend the life of the pavement. Caltrans thanks motorists for being patient during this construction and suggests that you allow extra time for their travel along these portions of State Route 94.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Diana Lindsay. My guest has many accomplishments that she shares with the San Diego region. She's co-founder and president of Sunbelt Publications, a book wholesale and publishing company specializing in outdoor and regional interest. She's also author or co-author of 11 publications, including 8 nonfiction books, 2 maps, and 1 ebook. Welcome, Diana. It's a pleasure to have you here in the studio.
Thank you for inviting me.
Diana, in addition to the accomplishments already mentioned, you serve on the board of the San Diego Museum of Natural History and as museum outreach interpreter, leading free public walks throughout San Diego. How did you get started in this area of history and botany and publishing? And for you, how does it all fit together?
Actually, it was more serendipity is what I would call it. I've never really planned anything in life. I kind of live in the moment, and as opportunities happen, I kind of take a look at them and move forward if the opportunity looks right. And so where I am today is probably a result of just that. I was always interested in bicycling as a kid growing up. I went to UCLA, looked for a bike club, but biking wasn't in.
Really?
But there was a club called the Bruin Mountaineers that did hiking.
Uh-huh.
So I joined that, learned about the outdoors, had never even hiked in the outdoors until I joined the club. And then I had a history prof that was absolutely fantastic and kind of coached me to go into history. And so I brought my love of the outdoors with history and mm-hmm. ended up doing a master's thesis on the history of Anza-Borrego Desert State Park.
Wow.
And by pure chance, mm-hmm. one of the professors on my thesis committee was a friend of Richard Perrott of Copley Books. And Copley Books wanted to do a book on the Anza-Borrego Desert. And unbeknownst to me, in the mail came a contract for a book. And that was my first book, unsolicited by me, because I was doing a thesis on the Anza-Borrego State Park. And that eventually led to my working with my husband on writing a guidebook to Anza-Borrego State Park, mm-hmm. which then led to my eventually becoming a representative for both Copley Books and Wilderness Press, selling not only my book, but their books, and then an offer from Copley Books to become their sales manager. And so it just kind of unfolded, mm-hmm. never was planned. It just kind of doors opened, and I walked into those doors. And then to get into my wholesale book business, it was kind of a funny situation. Helen Copley wanted to have her books into Walden Books, but at that point in time, Walden Books would not allow any vendors unless you had a Dun & Bradstreet number. And Helen Copley did not want to get a Dun & Bradstreet number because she would have to reveal all her assets. So as sales manager, I was told to go out and get a Dun & Bradstreet number so I could sell the Copley books to Walden Books. And I did, but then the IRS went after Helen Copley because she had been writing off some of her trips on the book division, and they gave her a choice of shutting down the book division or disclosing how the expenses really happened. So she shut the book division down. So there I was, no job, but I had a Dun & Bradstreet number, and I was a vendor with Walden Books. So I just began buying books and selling books to Walden's, eventually to Barnes & Noble. Mm-hmm. And at that point, Len Reggio purchased the B. Dalton stores and made them the Barnes & Noble stores, and he decided he did not want to have all the publishers dealing directly with Barnes & Noble. He'd heard I was selling books from various publishers, and I got a phone call at home from Len Reggio saying, "Are you a wholesaler?" And here I am in my garage, and I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "You're our wholesaler for the San Diego region." And suddenly, I was in a position that all these major publishers had to deal with me in my garage. And so then my husband said, "You need to decide, is this a hobby or is this a job? If this is a job, go get a warehouse." So that's basically where Sunbelt Publications started. And at that point then, I kind of expanded, and I kind of rode the tide with the big chain stores who were taking over and needed to have wholesalers that were their warehouses. But then as the chain stores became more dominant in the trade, they no longer needed the wholesalers because they were having their own distribution centers. So the rest of the story has to do with riding the tide, changing with the technology, changing with how the bookstores have dealt. And, you know, here I am still in business, but I've had to kind of change what I've been doing from a wholesaler now to focusing in more on distribution and publishing. And many of those major customers I had are now gone. There's no more Walden Books. There's no more Bookstar.
Right.
A lot of these other large chains that we dealt with, they're gone. So we've had to constantly change and kind of take a look and look for new opportunities. So the idea of looking for opportunities and being alert to changes in technology and all and riding with the flow, nothing's changed.
Being spontaneous and flexible has worked for you. It's an amazing story.
That has always worked.
Well, let's talk about two of your books, Marshall South and the Ghost Mountain Chronicles, and Ricardo Breseda, Accidental Artist.
Correct.
The first won Best Regional Book at the San Diego Book Awards and Best Book of the Year at the Outdoor Writers Association of California in 2005. Ricardo Breseda, Accidental Artist, won 7 awards in Best Regional Book, Cover Design, Biography, Art, and Travel from Forward Magazine, Independent Book Publishers Association, PubWest, Eric Hoffer Awards, to name a few. In your opinion, what is it about these two books that make them stand out?
Well, first of all, I think anyone who wants to write a book needs to check and see if there's a market for that book, if there's interest in the subject. In both cases, there was already the interest in Marshall South and his experiment in primitive living up on Ghost Mountain. There was a lot of curiosity. There were a lot of stories. People weren't really sure of what the whole story was, and everybody wanted to know. In the case of the sculptures, it was the same thing. There was these sculptures that Dennis Avery had commissioned to be placed around Borrego Valley. A lot of interest in it. People going out there to seeing them, and they wanted to know the story. So in the similarity of that, in fact, and I think in books, that if you want to select a topic to write about, is to first of all see where there is interest.
Right.
And if there is interest, then people already want to know the story. So then it's a matter of then researching the story, learning the story, and then writing the story, and then making sure you have, you know, a nice cover, a nice design, and that you're willing to go out and market the book. And I think that's the key to really having a successful book.
Now, you do nonfiction.
Personally, I do nonfiction.
Okay, so would you say this is the same for fiction?
In fiction, I think it's a little more creative process. You're kind of, you know, delving into maybe areas that have not been delved into before and trying to get into some totally new area. That's not an area that I personally deal with. I deal with things that are probably, as you said, in the nonfiction arena. So I look for topics that are already there and need the story to be told.
Well, it sounds like you've told many stories in your time. One last question. After a quarter of a century of success in the book trade and so much community involvement, what's next? I mean, what are your goals for Sunbelt Publications, and what about yourself as an author?
First of all, for Sunbelt Publications, it certainly has evolved with the times. For instance, we're no longer a huge wholesaler. You know, we're now a much smaller publisher and a distributor, and we're focused on quality books rather than a lot of books. So we're focusing in on topics that are a little more unusual, that have a market, that people want to have and hold, and so we're kind of really focused on that kind of thing. We also believe strongly in the environment and in our region, and we like to see the history and the culture and the natural history of the area preserved. So we look for books that are in that area that have value and that will tell a story and that are educational, because we strongly believe that in order to really protect something, you need to love it, and to love it, you need to know about it, and you need to be educated about it. So we're about telling the story. We want to tell the story of this region. We want to tell a story that makes people love the area. Personally, I would like to spend more time writing some more books and getting into more topics. I've got a backlist of a whole bunch of topics I would really like to work on. And then we're always looking for exceptional authors. And again, for those that are out there, you know, if they, the question might be, what are we looking for? Well, we're looking not only for somebody who has written a really good book that is about our region that would fit into the books that we're looking for. But more important than that, writing a book is only half the project. The other project is being a salesman.
Right.
You have to be able to market your book. You have to be able to go out there, talk to the public, be interviewed, not be afraid of doing that kind of thing. You can have the best book in the world, but if you don't have the ability to sell the book, it's not what we're looking for, because we know, having learned the hard way, that you really, really have to be able to sell your book, because books don't sell themselves. There's too much out there.
Right.
There's too much competition. Self-publishing, which used to have a really black mark because it was considered a vanity press, has really kind of changed over the years, and there are more and more self-published books, and people that are doing that are out there really pushing those books. So if you're self-published, if you're going with a publisher, no matter, the one key is how well can you sell that book.
Right. So the one thing in common is that the author will have to do a lot of work.
The author has to do a lot of work. There's not, I think, a publisher around, unless it's a very exceptional book, that is going to pick up a book if the author is shy and not willing to do any work to push that book.
Okay. Well, you've given some good words of advice for our authors out there. Our time is up, but thank you again for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
For more information on my guest, Sunbelt Publications, and their authors, visit the company website at www.sunbeltbooks.com. And again, this is Raina Menashe, and you've been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Julian Rudd Falls reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ on cloud seeding. You may be surprised to know 2013 was actually one of the driest years ever recorded in some areas of California. Despite these dismal recordings, a new technology called cloud seeding may imply there's a brighter future than we thought. Cloud seeding is achieved by placing a machine on top of a summit that releases silver iodine particles into the air. Rain or snow only falls from a cloud when there's something to form and attach onto, such as dust. These tiny silver iodine particles act as natural dust, thus making it easier for rain and snow to fall. Although this may sound like a very promising and door-opening prospect, we have to weigh the costs and benefits. When further looking into the technique itself, using silver iodine particles, it turns out silver iodine isn't environmentally friendly. In fact, Deepwater Chemicals, a large manufacturer of silver iodine for weather modification, states that silver iodine is a hazardous substance and consumption may actually lead to iodinism. Symptoms of iodinism include weakness, skin rash, irritation of the mucous membrane, and other side effects. Even further, the Office of Environment and Health Safety at UC Berkeley says silver iodine is a Class C inorganic and soluble substance which is potentially hazardous to fish, plants, and human life. However, advocates of cloud seeding claim that there are only trace amounts of silver iodine due to a dilution of rainfall. Cloud seeding can only be done in 20 degree or below weather, so it's not an option for San Diego. although it may be a viable source of water for Northern California, which supplies water to Southern California.
If you need help with your taxes, the AARP Tax Aid Program can help. They're offering free tax preparation and e-filing for senior citizens, low-income residents, and others in need in the East County area. Tax sites will be open the week of February 3rd and continue until April 15th. The AARP Tax Aid Program will be available at the following locations: the El Cajon Library, College Avenue Senior Center, Alpine Senior Center, La Mesa Adult Enrichment Center, and Edgemoor Hospital. Two locations that have offered this service in the past, Lemon Grove Senior Center and the Salvation Army, will not be open this year. Past clients at these two sites are welcome to make an appointment at any of the other locations.
Now it's time for the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz. Today, my guests are John and Ed. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
All right, you ready for our first question? Why do lakeside planners want to remove a bunya-bunya tree next to the library?
The bunya-bunya tree.
Mm-hmm.
Native to Australia?
No. It causes bunions in the elders going into the library.
You're kind of close. Sounds like you guys need
some. You can't make a surfboard out of that one.
No, yeah. They're not making surfboards out of it. It might be good for the economy, but... No, okay, let's give you some choices here. The roots are undermining a sidewalk, the crown is shading solar panels, the tree is in the way of a library expansion, or falling 20-pound pine cones are safety hazards.
Pine cones, big safety hazard. I've stumbled on them and a number of times.
You got it. That's right. That's right. This is a tree that dates back to prehistoric times that has the world's largest pine cones.
Cool. Well, figured.
Okay, next question. Hakumba Hot Springs recently installed a 1,200-pound statue at its community center depicting something commonly seen in East County. What is it?
Nudists running around in that area.
No, they do have a clothing optional resort out there, but it is not a statue of nudists. This is a library where kids go.
I think I remember this one. Is it a rattlesnake?
You've got it. A rattlesnake. That's right.
Stumped that one.
It's a tough people in this town there. Okay. Next question. Famous Western artist Olaf Wiegehorst, who used to live in El Cajon, formerly gained fame for rescuing many people as a member of New York's Mounted Police Force. How did he first learn his horseman skills that enabled him to save over 100 people on horseback in Central Park?
He was originally in the Polish cavalry in 1939 to 1941.
Good guess, but as far as I know, that's not true. But it's not where he learned his horsemanship skills.
I was thinking that he probably played polo.
Nope. Okay, let's give you guys some choices. Did he first learn his horseman skills as a racehorse jockey, a cowboy, a Wild West show star, or a circus acrobat?
I guess polo wasn't on there.
No,
circus acrobat, I think, is exactly what he was.
He was a circus acrobat. He actually was all of those things except a jockey. He was a cowboy, a Wild West star. But when he was a young man, he traveled through Europe supporting his family as a circus acrobat.
And how is that different than the Polish cavalry?
I don't know. Okay, here's another one. El Cajon recently voted to get rid of something unpopular. What was it?
Besides the city council?
Besides, they're still
the
there.
Mayor.
The mayor. Well, they did get rid of the mayor, actually. He resigned, but that was besides that.
There was something about, they were doing something with their liquor stores a while ago. I remember they had changed their liquor laws.
El Cajon got rid of liquor?
Well, they do have a deemed approved alcohol ordinance that restricted alcohol. So actually, we're going to give you kind of half a point. You're right. But that was not the what I had in mind. The options were jaywalking tickets, red light cameras, library fines, or parking meters.
Parking meters, hopefully.
Nope. John?
Red light cameras.
You got it.
Excellent.
Along with
good for them.
Poway, San Diego, some other cities too have done that. Okay. Santee's City Council recently opened a session with a religious message. What was it?
It was not a Buddhist message, nor was it Muslim.
Nope, it wasn't. Okay, let me give you some choices, though it may surprise you. Was it a Hindu mantra, a Jewish Torah reading, a Muslim prayer, or an evangelical sermon?
An evangelical sermon.
Nope, nope. Even though this is East County, no, they actually opened it with...
a mantra?
Ed got it right. A Hindu mantra. Amazing. Okay.
They did yoga for a while, too.
Om. Yeah, maybe they thought they all needed to meditate a little. Mellow out there. Okay. Ratepayers in San Diego are paying the highest electric utility rates in the nation. But SDG&E's CEO has a salary of $3.9 million. How much did it increase in 10 years? What percent?
Only 10% per year.
Nope.
I would say a 40% increase.
Nope. 10 years? Nope. Let me give you some choices. Was it 50%, 100%, 200%, or 400%?
400% because he did such a good job gouging rate.
Yes, you got it.
Wow.
You got it exactly.
So it was 10 times what I had said.
Okay, 40%. And one more for you guys. Okay, you're doing pretty good here. Where in East County would you find mudbogging, monster trucks, and a demolition derby?
Where in East County? The rodeo?
Lakeside.
That was one of my guesses, but no, that was a fake-out answer. Other choices were the...
Saturday night downtown El Cajon.
Well, you might, but not that I know of. The other choices were the Hakumba Jamboree, the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous, or the El Cajon Speedway.
El Cajon Speedway.
Nope.
Wow.
Nope. You might find the monster trucks, but the mud bogging and the demolition derby and all three of those together, it's a new event, the Hakumba Jamboree.
Cool.
I'll be there.
Right.
Demolition derby and mud buggy and big truck. That's an all-American big trucks and demolition derbies. You can't get that.
And that concludes this edition of the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz. And thank you for joining us. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.